real pleasure to welcome Jim Rupp. Jim, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Jim, you know, I think Al Masty, who I mentioned earlier, was like the first, you know, Rupp Racing name that I can recall. And now Owendale's exploits really kind of elevating you, you know, talk about getting involved in the game and how much you're enjoying it.
Well, with a horse like Owendale, it makes it easy. But always had an interest going back to my father, who owned a few horses along the way. Nothing that did anything, but he had a love of the game. And actually, I attended races early on at DRC in Hazel Park in Detroit with my father. We're talking, late 60s, 70s. And enjoyed it. And my father also had a group of guys. He'd attend the Breeders' Cup. They travel every year, the Breeders' Cup. And more and more became interested. And then my son-in-law, John Wentworth, and I talked. John was into the standardbreds. He trained and raced them. And we talked about doing something. John beat me to the punch. The first thing he did was he talked to several trainers, and he got together with Brad Cox. And the first horse he claimed was Chocolate Ride, who had some tremendous turf success at the fairgrounds. So after a while, I said, well, I think I'm ready. He sent me some video of Al Masty, and I told him I'm in, and that got me started. So
when you get involved and when you meet with some success, talk about how it fuels, you know, the further interest, and I'm anxious to actually hear about hooking up with Mike Ryan, because it didn't, you know, there's some people that, I mean, let's be honest, they come into the game and they might wander around blind without a cane. You managed to latch on to, you know, one of the top bloodstock identifiers around.
Yeah, I do a lot of research, I'll say that, but I was familiar with Mike, and I gave him a call. And I had purchased a couple horses beforehand, and I was also involved in some claimers with my son-in-law. But I needed some help, so I asked Mike. I called him, I believe it was late summer, before the Keeneland September sale, and told him my budget, which was $150,000. I asked him if he could help me. He said he would. He said, you know, you're probably looking at some of the later books there, mid-round. And I don't think I talked to him again until the sale. I went there and talked to Mike, and he said, I don't really have anything for you. So that day he got looking, and he came up with three horses he wanted to show me. I'll never forget it. We were outside the sales pavilion when they bring the horses in. I got to see them one at a time. The first one being a hard spun colt, and I don't know, I wasn't wild about him. Not that meant anything, but Mike said he really wasn't either. He told me a few times there was an In a Mischief colt that he really liked. And then he bought a midnight loot colt out. I believe it was out of a AP Indy mare, and I really liked him. And Mike liked him too. And again, he told me he liked the In a Mischief colt the best. So anyway, I passed on him. And Mike comes back after the horse was at auction, and he goes, well, I bought him. And so that impressed me quite a bit. And then the In the Mischief Gold came out, and he was a big. It was all the handler could do to keep up with him. He had a huge walk, and Mike was right. So anyway, we bid, and I stretched out a little bit, 200, and got Ondale. So that's where that started.
Talk about the 200 is more or less it's a decent amount of money to pay for for a yearling, but it's not it's not the stratosphere. Talk about what you strategically what your goals were or your expectations and how you. Arrive at a budget and the willingness to, to stretch a little. If you say, if you give a bloodstock advisor, $150,000 budget with the hopes of maybe getting two horses, that kind of thing. I mean, talk about those decisions and how, as you say, you researched and you ended up, in good hands. But I think a lot of owners struggle, Jim, with, with imposing their, their business instinct into an area where they're venturing for the first time. I mean, it's one of the great, oddities about the game is that people come in and sometimes they think, well, I'm successful in my field, so I'll be successful here, and they spend a lot of money and they walk away frustrated.
Right. Well, I tried to live within my budget, and I did. I allowed myself to, go beyond a little bit, but stayed within my budget and really was looking for one horse. I was looking for a colt that could maybe go two turns on the dirt. And lo and behold, we got Ondale and the Chop Rat and his crew have done with him. Is just I can't say enough. But yeah, I try to live within my budget. That's first and foremost. And now this is allowing me to do maybe a little more, which is success. So I think staying within your budget and just having some of the best people. In the industry, Brad Cox and Mike Ryan, Niall Brennan broke the horse. I just feel very fortunate, and I think it's like anything. It's surrounding yourself with good people, and fortunately, Mike didn't know me from Adam, but he helped me out, and I'll be eternally grateful.
Are you retired? Are you?
Yeah, I'm retired. Yeah, I'm 66. I'm retired.
And I know you came from the oil business, but you're Michigan based.
I am. I'm in Michigan. Lived here all my life. Yeah, and that's why when I mentioned DRC and Hazel Park early on. So those were the racetracks. And now we don't have anything.
No.
Here, but. Hooking up with Brad, and it was obvious that Brad was going to be successful. And I'm a lucky guy.
Bay City, Michigan, in fact. And yep. When we look at the season that really the two seasons that Owendale has fashioned, all. Virtually all the starts within reach, and of course you're certainly going to go to events like the Breeders' Cup, and when you get a horse into the Preakness, I mean off that Lexington win last year, and the chance to to run in a classic in relatively short order, Jim, in your development curve as an owner and in the experiences. But, you know, here's this horse that is, you know, early, let's call it midway through his 4-year-old year. And, you know, he won the Grade 3 Lexington. He won the Ohio Derby, you know, after the Preakness, the Oklahoma Derby, second in the Grade 1 Clark behind Tom's the Tot, who simply wasn't going to lose that Clark, as it turned out. And, you know, now launches into a four-year-old year with a terrific rally. I mean, it's also as much fun as it is to have a multiple stake graded stake winner. This is one of those horses that is going to, you know, always be coming late, and so there's an excitement factor in watching him and seeing him rally. And you couldn't have felt too good at the top of the stretch on Saturday.
Yeah, I wasn't. The confidence wasn't high, but we know he likes to come. And I tell you what, Florent Giroux has just done such a great job. He knows the horse. He knows what he likes to do. And he puts him in that position. And we certainly hope for the best when he goes. But Flo's done such a nice job with him, too.
He's won. Castellano rode him in the Breeders' Cup. And yeah. That was a problematic trip, but you know, you look at the series of wins. He won it first asking with Fernando de la Cruz. That was in Indiana, and that was a clever spotting by Brad to go to Indiana, you know, as a 2-year-old and, you know, send him a mile because it was obvious that this was a horse that was going to need a route of ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brad has an act for putting a horse where he should be, and. That was very exciting. It was kind of like the last race. I didn't think he'd get up, but he did. So just a great job by the crew. And like I say, I'm really, really blessed to have these people. I can't say enough about them, Steve.
This is what everybody, you know, when you get into it, and it's so funny because it was yesterday with Chuck Simon, and we were talking about the financial strains that are involved in ownership, and there's not a school of thought, but there certainly is the desire of many to, you know, to make a stallion. And, you know, one of the benefits of buying a horse like this and going into your pocket a little bit deeper than the budget allowed was, you know, essentially, you know, you're buying a horse that if he's successful, he's got a stallion's pedigree. And then to see him start to tick off the boxes, Jim, as he goes, I mean, multiple Grade 1 placed, including in a classic, multiple graded stake winner, buy into mischief out of a Bernardini mare. We just talked about Bernardini mares with Sid, and bred by Barbara Banky at Stone Street. I mean, this is, you know, you seem like you're on your way to a payday, I mean, with him. And if you think you're involved in the game now, wait until you got 6 or 8 mares to breed to him.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's nothing I would love more than to be able to do more in this business. And hopefully Ohndale's leading the way here, but I know Brad and would like to get him a Grade 1. I talked to Brad, texted me this morning, and he'd like to point him towards Stephen Foster and the Met Mile, one of the two. So we'll see what happens there.
Well, the Met, this is a really difficult, probably a difficult kind of a equation to decide. You get the Grade 1 opportunity in the Met, and you've got to think that the format, the one turn mile, offers, you know, on the long back stretch, typically hot paced, offers a chance for him and his style versus, you know, running out of, he's been based at Keeneland. So, you know, being close in Kentucky, now at Churchill, he's got a win in a second with the Clark. So you balance those. And, of course, the Foster now a grade two and the Met, you know, a grade one. So it's a tough decision, but I don't know. I would. Yesterday, Andy Sterling told me, you know, make sure you put in a push for the Met with you.
Yeah. Well, you know, the decision won't be tough for me, Steve, because Brad's going to tell me where he thinks he should be, and that's where we're going to be.
I like it. Well, and that, you know, that is part of this came up yesterday with Chuck, too, about the trust factor and, you know, having people that, you know, that you're confident in and, you know, that there's an honest exchange, you know, what the expectations are and then, you know, what you're hearing and the decision-making process. And it sounds like, you know, you've got the absolute perfect attitude and you're being rewarded, you know, on the racetrack.
Yeah. There's nothing I can Brad will forget more than I'll ever know about this business, and I'm so happy to have him.
Talk a little bit more about the family too, and you know, the opportunities to, you know, to go to these these, you know, the big races. I mean, right now that's on hold, but it'll come back around.
Well, it's my son and his fiance. They're disappointed that they can't go. They've been to everyone, and I said, hey, we're fortunate to be running, so the time will come when we can get back. But yeah, they absolutely love it, and it's just been great for the family. My daughter was married to John. She's attended her share of races too, and it's been a great deal for all of us. A lot of fun. Like I say, I feel very fortunate, Steve.
Jim, got to ask the question about, you know, some of those some of those intricacies, the color scheme when you designed the silks. You got a really lovely jacket, the purple and the gold. What's the significance of the colors?
Okay, the purple and gold. My high school, Bay City Central. Purple and gold.
That's great.
So that's it. The R, the R is the little stamp with my return address on.
That's great.
And I took that from. So there's the design. And I have to say, Owendale. Go ahead, Steve.
I was going to follow up with the Owendale portion, and
it's a little village. I don't know if there's 200 people in the thumb of Michigan, where my father was born and raised. My parents are.
Oh, wow!
I can only think what he'd be thinking.
That is sweet. Up in the Upper Peninsula.
No, in the thumb, in the if you look
okay, on the other okay,
the, yeah, on the east, in the lower. So,
well, wow! I'm just pulling. I'll tell you what, Jim. I'm pulling up a map. I've traveled extensively, and that is a. A section of Michigan and the country that's really, I mean, that is, I can see. I mean, they're, I guess Bay City's and Saginaw, right, are the biggest towns close by.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I went to having gone to Colgate and broadcast hockey. There are a number of guys from Saginaw or played at Saginaw, the Saginaw Gears, and guys from Sarnia and Sault Ste. Marie, and it's an interesting part of North America.
Yeah, in fact, John, my son-in-law, played on a semi-professional team as a goalie, and in fact, our partner Stéphane Brochu is from Montreal. And the horses partnered in. It was in the New York Rangers organization, and they actually played, made it to the big club. So we're hockey fans here.
Absolutely. And you got great collegiate. There are plenty of great collegiate hockey through between Michigan State, Lake Superior State, and all the other. All through there. I love it. Well,
small school which made it.
Fair, that's right.
NCAA finals.
Yeah.
Big hockey.
We play. Colgate has had fair. We've done home and home stuff with over the years with Ferris, and you know, go travel there and play two, and or they've come to us in Hamilton. I love it. I mean, you grew up. Did you grow up toward Owendale or more? More
well,
down
city isn't that far. Bay City isn't that far.
No.
My father moved here and began his business. My dad was a real good baseball player. In fact, the Detroit Tigers offered him a contract, a Class D contract back in the day.
Wow.
but he decided to go in business, and he made a very good decision there.
Was he in the petroleum business?
He started the business, sure. Yeah, made it what it was.
Well, Jim, this is one of those success stories in ownership that is really encouraging, and people listening, this is an intimidating venture, really at every level. I mean, even for casual and people that are in small partnerships, small percentages through partnerships, it can be intimidating. So it's to me important to communicate to people that you can not just have fun, but you can succeed and succeed at the highest level.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I appreciate that, Steve. And like I say, I'm very fortunate. I don't know what else to say.
Well, you're doing great. And now people, when they see the purple and gold, they'll know the tie-in, and I'm sure some people listening pulled up Owendale on the map, and we hope we get to see you at some point, maybe at Belmont or later on when things open up, Breeders' Cup, certainly everybody's hopeful, but delighted for your success, and best wishes going forward.
Steve, thank you. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Not at all. Jim Rupp, everybody, Rupp Racing, and the whole family involved is his son-in-law. And you've seen the GenStar names. That's his, John Wentworth. And it's funny. I did see in one of the horses, maybe, I don't know if it was Almasty, but I saw in one of the horses, I saw a Brochu, and yeah, it was an Almasty. And so now I'm going to root even more because, my 10 years in Montreal and, knowing that he's got a Quebecois involved in the partnership. That's great. Let's take a break, probably our last of the morning, and Seth Merrow rolls in. We'll handicap a little. Seth, we'll see if he looked at Fahner. We're definitely going to go through the pick five with Seth. But he also, he's partial to Tampa. So he may have done Tampa. We'll find out when Seth Merrow joins us next at the races. Back after this.
Racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back 20 minutes to noon on this Wednesday. Seth Merrow, Capital OTB, Equidaily.com, standing by. Good morning.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Absolutely.
On a beautiful day in upstate New York. Continued beautiful day in upstate New York.
Yes. We certainly waited long enough, and now we're being delivered upon a sequence of really, really nice afternoons. And, of course, I guess we could sit outside and watch the races on the laptop later. It'd actually be early evening by the time Fawner rolls around. But, Seth, everybody says a fond farewell to tiny Fawner Park in Grand Island, Nebraska.
And I've said it a couple of times over the last couple of weeks. You know, thank you to Fawner and Will Rogers and Oak Lawn and Tampa and Gulfstream for keeping the racing game going during the shutdown period. And it was nice to be able to watch that. And I think potentially we pulled in some new fans, but certainly Fawner did. And it's been fun to kind of watch and read the numbers that have come in from them over the course of the last couple of months. And so congratulations to them for being able to put on the show they did. Now they leave. I think with this pick five and a nice carryover, I think they're going to leave with a bang.
Well, and I don't know if you saw it, for those that, you know, that have followed their feed, but they sent out after the sixth race yesterday, a thank you, and they had reached the all source handle figure of $100 million. And I think everybody's appreciative of Chris Katulak's efforts, and everybody, and particularly because, you know, of the meatpacking industry in Grand Island, you know, they were a hot spot, and are a hot spot. And so, you know, there were challenges undoubtedly for all the staff, and for them to do this was really remarkable. And I don't know how Chris is going to be able to meet those numbers. I hope compensation isn't tied to to handle increases. Maybe
year to year.
This will have to, yeah, year to year is going to be tough to equal for sure. It's really been a nice story, and I've enjoyed the bull ring, the brand of racing that it is. And I think when they wrap up, I mean, we may have to turn our attention the little bit to, not much of a night racing player, but may have to look at a little Chucktown, a little Charlestown to keep the bull ring mojo going.
Yeah, I've said it before over the years on Capital OTB TV. For a while, we were doing the entire week. Now I'm more Wednesday through Sunday, so some of the bigger venues. But for a while, I was doing the handicapping on Mondays and Tuesdays, too, which would have me focusing on some of the smaller venues and some of those bullring venues. And I said, if people don't do those, occasionally toss one into your mix, because it just kind of freshens up your handicapping. You have to get away from some of the crutches you rely on that are great and help your handicapping, but at the tracks you normally follow, you're familiar with the trainers and the jockeys and some of the ways that they play the game and the track plays at those kind of venues. So you shift up and you go to a new track. You just have to, as I say, refresh things. And I think it's a great way to kind of just re-energize your handicapping a little bit. So, you know, maybe toss in some Mondays and Tuesdays occasionally where you might be sitting on the sideline just to take a fresh look at things. And Fonner allowed that to a lot of people this winter, certainly, or this spring.
Yeah, and as did Will Rogers, and it was two different kinds of ovals, and it seemed like the two, you know, tracks played, you know, differently. Certainly, you know, being involved, you know, right from the outset, a big part of success at Fonner, and I don't think it took people very long to, you know, to latch on to, you know, the trainers that, you know, were sending out live horses in good spots. And you as a guy that played that plays Greyhound and harness, I think one thing that people may have come to recognize and appreciate is the way in which you got to see horses come back and run, you know, literally on a biweekly basis. I mean, there's horses running every 10 to 14 days, and every, you know, you would look down and you'd come back 2 weeks, you know, 10 days, 2 weeks later, and here's, you know, horse running, and then he ran back again, and then again, and you kind of got a feel for what you were looking at really, I thought, quickly. I'm going to miss it. I'm going to write this sequence up. I know you put out your sheet today was Tampa, but
I was just kind of waiting for scratches. And there are some limited scratches up already. They're very limited. There's 4 scratches on the card so far. But I was waiting before I put it up to have some scratches,
okay,
so I can actually put up a ticket as well. But I did look at the sequence.
Well, then I think we should spend some time, and you can give out your Tampa plays, but Tampa best bets, something like that. But let's look at Fonner while we've got a chance. We got about 14 minutes, and I told everybody yesterday the way the sequence unfolded. We've got a non-winners of 2 for 7,000. This is an allowance claimer, that type 6.5 that starts the sequence, the 5th. Thoughts?
Alex DeVice jumps off the page, and I'll probably put a reasonably priced ticket together and sing. I may single the first couple and then go a little bit deeper in the later legs, and maybe back up with a pick four to put in some horses I didn't use. But again, with a reasonable ticket, it seems like Alex DeVice jumps off the page. I have it 9, 1, 6, and 7, but I'll lean on Alex DeVice. I mean, he just, when you look at the buyer figures, he has a clear edge on this bunch. If I was going to go a little deeper, front office, I think, offers some opportunity. You look at the race three back, and it was a decent little third with a decent number. That's the Blinkers this afternoon. And he is maybe interesting. Best trick yet, potentially moving forward, improving. I could make a case there. But if I was going to go for a crazy horse in here, I'd probably toss Jerafin. Hasn't been seen since Remington in, October and November. But class-wise, I think he might stack up with these. I just, at this level, I'm not sure. But what the horse might not need a race to get back into some decent form. But again, Jerf, if I was going a little bit deeper in this leg, I'd certainly toss him in. But I'll probably, as I say, just use Alex DeVice.
Well, the first leg of the pick five starts at 6:48 Eastern, 5:48 Central, and I can't argue at all. I mean, Kelly Martinez and her husband and the horse has had a very good comeback effort, got beat ahead, but on his best, absolutely, this is a Fleet Alex 4-year-old. Seems very, very imposing. And you know, this is a horse, in fact, that it's just funny. We just got done with Jim Rupp, and this was a horse that was taken from his son-in-law's GenStar outfit and Brad Cox for $15,000. They had claimed the horse from Hobby, from Steve Hobby, at Indiana last summer, and they got a win with him and broke the maiden 30. And then when dropped in for 15, I actually had gotten disqualified from that race. And then they dropped him for 15 and he got poached. And it took a few more starts to break the maiden. And that happened at Mahoning Valley. Turned up here at Fawner. And I agree. I mean, it could be, especially if you have a small budget. Alex DeVice. Second leg, this is a Nebraska-bred filly group, 7,000, and it's an optional claimer. Non-winners are three lifetime.
And as I say, I'm going to start out pretty light. I may lean on Judge on the Run in here. Had the nice win last time in a similar event. These are the kind where I always say, why not right back? Won in a similar event last time, and why not right back again today in this very similar spot? So I'll probably lean there. But Chamber Doors, I think, is one that I'm going to debate. Again, I'm going to watch for those final set of scratches, and maybe what we have is what we have. But I may throw Chamber Doors into the mix because I think this one has a little early positional speed, was just behind the top pick last time. And so I think, at this level, it wouldn't shock me if they switched up positions. And then You Betcha I'm a Bumper in the third spot, comes off a third place behind those two last time. So, again, has the potential to be a little bit of a player in here. And as I said, there were currently four scratches, and one of those scratches is Love Supply, and the number 8 is out of this race because I was looking at that horse a little bit too. But that simplifies things for me a little bit. But I'll probably lean on Judge on the Run in here. As I say, go a little bit deeper in some of the later legs.
Well, and Loves a Flying was going to certainly provide some pace. I mean, it essentially is the pace. And Dakota Wood, You Betcha I'm a Bumper, he's going to have to stay in contact. Judge on the Run now, and can stalk. I would guess now that question Marky's got a little bit of speed, but maybe that Chamber Doors. I was going to try to get away with Judge on the Run and You Betcha I'm a Bumper, and it's that race April 13th at at Fonner, which is the same level, and you know, in here for the tag. And so You Betcha I'm a Bumper has cleared the condition, and she's a 9-year-old mare. She runs back to that race in April. She's a player in here with Judge on the Run. So I was going to probably go too deep. Third leg, and I thought this was the toughest race on the in the sequence with some really well-matched horses. The seventh, the $5,000 claimer, six furlongs. Never won four or hasn't won since December of last year. So... this
and
murder.
The four and the nine are out in here, and the nine Star Hunter was going to be a player for me. But that said, I had Shimmering Dream on top, so that just makes me have the ability to pare down a little bit in here. But Shimmering Dream, you go back to that race three back down at Turf Paradise. That was pretty good. I kind of like the move from Turf Paradise here, and I think it's going to class up nicely with this bunch. If you look at the numbers, the buyers, this horse out of town has been firing some good numbers. And again, I think it's going to fit nicely with this bunch. That 12-1 looks a little bit long because I think other people will look at those numbers, but maybe we'll get some value. But I'll put Shimmering Dream on top. Say Goodnight Gracie in the second spot. You have Speed from the Rail. Won a similar race last time. So, again, another one of those situations where did it last time, why not right back. And Spellwinder I had kind of sitting outside of my mix, but now with Star Hunter out, I'll pull Spellwinder in. There's enough there to think that this horse on a best effort can get up and do it. And at a $5,000 conditional, it's just who comes out and is kind of feeling their oats that day. So I think Spellwinder is playable too. So I have an 8, 1, and 6. I'll probably use all three of those.
The one problem with Spellwinder, there's a negative and there's a positive. The negative is that she's become, you know, a bit of a refusenik. I mean, there was a point here going back to Remington in November, four straight seconds, and she just hasn't won in ages, in, you know, essentially a year. The positive is she gets the services of Arietta, you know, who showed up here a couple of weeks ago and has been, you know, making a good impression. He'll head to Canterbury, I imagine, as soon as things wrap up. But I agree, Star Hunter, our Annabelle maybe a little, and Fiona Hills, they become the principals with Shimmering Dream and Memories Galore out. You might be able to get away with just three in here. I'm glad I had not
looked
at the scratches yet.
Shimmering Dream's in, Star Hunter out.
Oh, okay. Excuse me. There you go. Yeah. Drew a line through the wrong one. Nice. Thank you. So Shimmering Dream reinforced our Annabelle Fiona Hills. The eighth, and this is a 10,000. Optional claimer, non-winners of four lifetime, and this feels like that group that as I said, horses we've seen repeatedly, Bay Flowers and Indian Roses, who we actually latched on to at the beginning of April with that that big price. That was actually our first, I think, introduction to Fonner was Indian Roses. That was okay. The last feature of the season, and what you doing here?
I have five that I'm still looking at: 2, 6, 1,
yep.
7, and 5. Indy Roses comes off the close-up second last time to Let's Go Places. They're both in here, but that was the last race for Indy Roses. Let's Go Places has subsequently had one and threw in a little bit of a dud. And that race two back where Let's Go Places won, you know, on the number, maybe a little bit of an aberration over the past few races. So I was willing to leave that one out. I may regret that, but Indy Roses certainly on the improving numbers. Nice close-up second place last time. Have that one on top. Mayflowers in the second spot. Nice close-up second for this one last time as well on an improved number over the last three races. You go to the race four back, and it was a very nice number compared to this bunch with a good win at the $7,500 claiming level. But I think the races two and three back indicate the horse fits with this kind of a class level as well. Chevrolet in the mix for me. The race two back at the five level was pretty good. Bounced up to this level last time and ran a decent second, so got a little experience with this bunch. Dixie Flyer's interesting coming out of a couple of stakes races. You know, you don't know what the real class of stakes at Bonner is, but I think the horse is going to be a player. So I would definitely use those four, and then a bunch for lunch with Ariette on board. Oh, boy, that one, I'm not sure what I'm going to do with that. I have five in the ninth, too. One of these races I'll go five deep, and one I'll pair a horse out a little bit. But I have a 2-6, 1-7, and 5, and I'll definitely use at least the top four.
Yeah, I'm spread wide there, too, especially if I can end up narrow elsewhere. I might even be inclined to push the all button to get to the nightcap.
Well, I didn't mention Global Exchange, who started the career in New York and certainly has some backlash in there, but I just couldn't pull the trigger there. But it is an all-ball kind of a race if people can afford it.
And what are you doing in the nightcap real quick?
4, 9, 6, 8, and 10. Dreaming Diamonds looks pretty good. You know, it's one of these where you're just looking for a little life in an otherwise weak field. They're pretty consistent numbers with this bunch. Gypsy Wind Genie, the race two back, attracts me. And Ebony Knights off the past couple looks pretty good, too. But I have it 4, 9, 6, 8, and 10.
I've got 4, 8, 9, and I'm going to use those three, I think, to finish. Seth, everybody, Seth Merrow, 2 on Twitter. He's already got the Tampa Bay plays up there, and he'll add a Fonner idea. I'll get my Fonner Pick 5 information up at the website. I want to thank Seth. Jim Rupp, Rupp Racing, what a nice opportunity and a fun visit. Alan Foreman helping us, as well as Jay Pribman, on the big news story. Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. And Pete Fornatel, earlier in hour one. Good luck today. Thanks again to Fonner Park on a great season. Very special, and won over a lot of hearts. And we will talk to you tomorrow. Replay 6 to 9. Deja on the board. Thanks to Deja. She'll have the archives up before she leaves the studio. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.